Hi, and welcome to the Macro Show. We talk macro and trying to make sense of markets and people just buy the dip. I mean, hey, it's a bull market, right? I'm your host, Steve Van Meter, and here we are on day four of Kingdom Under Siege. And yes, the evil speculators continue to try to climb the walls, but we just push them back, just shove them back over. We'll take a look at the charts on that a little bit later. On today's show, we've got Congress terminating some of the Fed's emergency lending powers. We have the Fed proving Steve right and in print. I know, crazy, right? We're going to look at the speculative positioning, see what's going on in the bond market. We've got credit data to come back to from Friday because it wasn't available. Let's just get right into this. Here we have the text from the stimulus bill, or I'm not actually sure what it's called. But anyways, here we see section 1005, termination of authority. And we'll just skip right down to the Federal Reserve programs or facilities in general. After December 31st, the Board of Governors of the Federal Reserve and the Federal Reserve Banks shall not make any loan, purchase any obligation, asset, security, or other interest, or make any extension of credit through any program or facility established under Section 13.3 of the Federal Reserve Act, in which the Secretary made a loan guarantee, or other investment pursuant to Section 4003B, subsection 4, other than a loan submitted on or before December 14, 2020, to the Main Street Lending Program's lender portal for the sale of participation interest in such loan, provided that the Main Street Lending Program purchases a participation interest in such a loan before January 8th of next year. So effectively what's happening is the Main Street Lending Program is getting removed. Now there will be no such modification. They will not be able to modify any terms or conditions of any program unless it meets a couple exceptions. And with that, let's see if there's anything of interest here. Rule of construction. Here, nothing in this act shall be construed to modify or limit the authority of the Board of Governors of the Federal Reserve System under Section 13.3F of the Federal Reserve Act as of the day before the enactment of the CARES Act. So what you have here is, you know, there's a lot of debate on this, of what's going on. You have Republican view, Democratic view, Steve view. Steve view, which is probably a minority held view, is the Fed shouldn't have these powers anyways. They crossed the line. They went into the gray area, and finally Congress is getting around to taking it away. Now, whether or not this is the right time or place, it doesn't matter. To me, the Fed shouldn't have these powers, so this is a good thing. Now, of course, the response will be, well, now that limits the Fed's abilities. It doesn't matter. They shouldn't have ever had these powers to begin with. So this is a step in the right direction of limiting the Fed's power. Now, of course, a lot of people think that as soon as assuming President Biden takes, or when he takes office, I don't even know what's really going on with that. But as soon as Yellen is installed as the Treasury Secretary, that they're going to unravel the whole Federal Reserve Act. I really don't see any evidence to support that. I've not seen anything publicly stated or anything. In fact, this bill here tells you what what Congress's view is. They just want to limit the Fed to what the Fed's power should be. Now, the Fed did say today that they put out a report, and I'll try to link this and both reports, the full act or bill, and this report in the comments for you. What drives U.S. Treasury reuse? Now, this is a 54-page piece, but one thing I found very interesting here, it says, we find Treasury reuse increases as the supply of available securities decrease. So what that is saying is that dealers and banks reuse or rehypothecate securities over and over when the supply decreases, especially when supply declines due to Federal Reserve asset purchases. This is something I said last year in my interview on Real Vision with Brent Johnson, and a lot of people have trouble with that and don't believe it, but there it is in print. I'll link that if you're so inclined to take a look at that. Now, today we got the Chicago Fed National Activity Index, and this is a really cool index because, again, it's a national activity. It shows what's going on around the country. And what we find is we're now at the lowest level from the recovery. So the previous low level of this was at 0.4. We're now at 0.27. Now, anything above zero means growth. But what we're seeing is continued slower, lower and lower trend growth that is potentially likely to go negative. Now, from an inflationary standpoint, because so many people are worked up over inflation, well, what you have to do is look at this relative to inflation cycles, and it's currently at 0.56. And when the three-month moving average is at 0.7, which it is below, more than 2 years in an economic expansion, you tend to get sustained increasing inflation. So what the Chicago Fed National Activity Index is telling us, my friends, this notion of inflation is going away. Now, we also had today the 20-year Treasury auction, and it was a pretty decent auction overall. Now, what makes an auction better than not? Well, one thing is how much foreign or indirect bidders bid. That's always important. The market also looks at something called the bid to cover. How many bids did they get to cover what was there? That is how they look at demand. There was 2.39 bids to cover the auction. And all that means is it was at its six-month average, which the market deems as good. Now, I have said that what will happen is because of these oversized auctions, we saw, you know, below trend demand, so below the six-month average. But what will happen is as we move forward in time, those lower averages will start to become the norm. So anything better than that's going to look really good. And we're potentially seeing that here in the 20-year auction. We didn't see a zero bid like we have on the 30-year, but still a low yield bid suggesting where the market is pointing interest rates are going. Overall, decent auction. Could have been a little bit better on the foreign side, but you know, it is pretty good otherwise. Let's take a look at how hedge funds are positioned. And of course, we want to focus on the bond market because that's where some of the activity is, and the dollar. We'll look at that. But let's look at 10-year treasuries. No real change here, even though we see that 10-year yields have kind of been rising as this guy, I don't even know what his name is, Hedgeopia, draws a line there. You can see that. How about the 30-year? Well, they backed off a little bit. Now, he doesn't look at all sources. This is one of the reasons why I asked my friend Brent Johnson for a chart, and I beg for that every week. We don't have that. We'll have it next week for you, I'm sure. But anyways, you see they backed off a little bit. So what I want to do is take you into the Commodity Futures Trading Corporation data and take a look at what's going on. This is where this data is pulled from. We'll go here to Treasury bonds, and then there's Ultra bonds. Those are the Ultras. Here's the Treasury bonds, and then we have Ultra. So what we can see is leveraged funds or hedge funds reduced their short interest a little bit by 9,000 contracts, not terribly large. But what's also interesting is dealers reduced their short interest by almost 5,000 contracts. So dealers are fairly short here. I told you a couple weeks back, I went and looked, and at 120,000 contracts short, dealers are relatively short. Now, this isn't their all-time record short, but it's pretty high up there. Now, why are dealers short? Well, it makes sense because the market is telling everyone that interest rates are going up. So dealers have to protect the downside risk when they buy at auction. But as they back off of these shorts, what it's telling you is the dealers are becoming more and more confident that rates are not going to continue going up. So we saw a decrease here, but what we did see is an increase on the Ultra. So Ultra Treasury bonds here went up by 12,000 contracts. But again, the dealers are backing off, you know, not a ton. You know, 2,900 is not huge. If they were backing off 10 or 15,000, that would be pretty impressive. But where you see is some repositioning from the bond into the Ultras in terms of increasing the amount of short position. Now, someone asked, you know, are they just short long bonds? Well, the answer is no, they're not. If we look at two-year treasury, you can see there's 722,000 short contracts out of, you know, 1.9 million positions. How about the 10-year treasury? There's, you know, 525,000 short contracts. How about the Ultra 10, almost a quarter million? If we look at the five-year, there are 1.2 million positions short. These are all hedge funds. So you can see they're short the bond market. Now let's take a look at some of the other positions here. And the only one of really notable interest to me, you know, you look at crude oil, which took a pretty big hit. The market is, again, long inflation sensitive assets. I mean, they're recovery assets. And we look at the S&P, they're a little short here, nothing major going on there. How about the euro? This is obviously putting downward pressure on the dollar. And so we see no major change there. How about in gold? No major change there either. Looking at the NASDAQ, no major change, still slightly long. Russell 2000, now they're backing off on their Russell longs, looking like they're going to start cashing in on some of these positions now that the Russell's gotten bid way out of line. And how about the dollar? There's a big drop in the short position. So let's take a look and see if we can find that here on this CFTC report. And so all you have to do is just do a keyword search. Aha, U.S. dollar index. Now, this is pretty interesting because you see leverage funds decrease their short position. So you say, well, wait a second. Why is there such a big drop here? Well, it's because they also decrease their long position by 8,800 contracts. So you see leverage. So speculators are kind of split between their long and their short positions, but they massively backed off their longs. But look at dealers. They were fairly short, and now they've pretty much wiped off all of their short positions and added to the long. So now what are dealers thinking? Dealers are positioning for a rising dollar. So I think that's pretty interesting. Let's go back and see. How about VIX? We've seen an increase in the short position on the VIX. Let's see if we can find that on here as well. Oh, there it is, VIX futures. And we can see leverage funds have increased their short positions and reduced their long positions on the VIX. And let's see what's going on with dealers. It's pretty much a net even change. They added to their long and short positions. So we see speculators are getting even shorter on volatility, expecting stock prices to continue to rise. Now, somebody asked is, you're just showing the futures report. Is there anything else? Yeah, here's on the NASDAQ.com. You can see the short interest on different securities. So let's just look at TLT because it is the largest traded long-term bond ETF. And you can see there are almost 15,000 shares short. Now, this is not back at the high of over almost 21,000 set back in August, but 15,000 shares that are short is still quite substantial. All right, so there we got our short positions. Now I want to come back to the data from Friday because we didn't have the charts, were not updated. The Fred database didn't have them done for whatever reason, very unusual. And this isn't them. That's the one we're going to look at in a moment. Here we go. So let's take a look at real estate loan growth because the year over year rate of growth hit 0.62. And it's about to go negative. I mean, we're within a potential of a couple of weeks of this thing hitting zero and then going negative. The six-month rate of change is at minus 0.36. The three-month rate of change continues to lead us lower at minus 0.68, despite record low interest rates. So what you're seeing here, my friends, is amount of debt that is being issued. So all these new loans that are coming out and these cash out refis, is not enough. There's not enough new credit being created to offset all of the credit destruction from low interest rates. Because as people make payments on their loans, principal payments on their loans, whether it's part of a regular monthly payment or a one-time payment, it destroys money. So what you're seeing here is that credit destruction on a year-over-year basis, which is close to going negative. Now with commercial industrial loans, we're a bit off that going negative. But the trend is telling you, the growth rate is still at a whopping 11% from a year ago, but the six-month rate of change is at minus 10, and the three-month rate of change is at minus 5. And what this all means is somewhere in March or early April, based on the current trend, this is likely to go negative too. Now, why does all that matter? Well, I'll get to that in a moment. How about loans and leases and bank credit at all commercial banks? Now, the growth rate is down to 3.17% from a year ago. So this is pretty weak. And you can see, recessions typically have occurred right at this level. And the six-month rate of change is at minus 3 and falling. The three-month rate of change is at just shy of 1.5 and falling. And this rarely goes negative during a recession. Usually it gets there well afterwards. And we see that in the real estate market. You can see in the real estate chart here, it tends to go negative after the recession is over. But we're going to look a little more detail at this in a moment. How about consumer loans? We look at credit cards. We talk about, what consumers are actually seeing in terms of inflation, and their confidence in the economy is based on when they charge on their credit cards because they feel that their incomes or will have future cash flows to make those payments. And it's at flat at minus 10.8% from a year ago. So if you're looking for resurgence in the consumer, you're seeing nothing here. This is showing credit destruction, which is not exactly what you want. Now, when we come over here to this chart here, because a lot of people have said, you know, Steve, I think you got this wrong. You know, interest rates, you know, they've already bought them. I mean, you've totally missed the boat on this. And this is where you got to understand, you know, credit destruction. So when you go negative on a year-over-year rate of change, you know, whether it's, you know, credit cards, you know, home loans, or commercial industrial loans, obviously the bigger the better. So, you know, it's even more impactful when you have it on home loans versus credit cards, just because there's a larger volume of it. It means money is being destroyed. Now, you don't really notice this so obviously in the M2, which is what a lot of people focus on, but it can be kind of an anchor around the M2's neck and start to pull the growth rate down. It could slow it down. Doesn't mean it's going to go negative, but the fact that we're not seeing new credit being created means the system's got to rely on the money that's in there. And when you look at the chart here, and what all I've done is I've taken real estate loans and overlaid 30-year treasury yields, because we would, you know, mostly associate, you know, long-term treasury yields with real estate loans. And what you can see is you don't get a bottom in yields usually until after I mean, doesn't mean you can't have bottoms, but you get a bottom in yields after you get a major contraction in credit. So you can see there's periods where yields can rise and then all of a sudden, boom, they come way back down. So you see these credit contractions right in here are all due to, they're all due to people paying down on their loans and not enough new credit. And that is bearish for yields. You can see right here coming out of the 1990s recession. You know, real estate credit didn't contract, but the growth rate was really low, and then yields had to fall. Why? To spur credit growth. You can see it here in the dot-com bubble. You know, real estate growth slowed, yields went down, new all-time lows. Here it is in the great financial crisis. You see this big plunge went negative. This is the first time in the data that I have been able to find where it went negative. That ultimately led to lower interest rates, new all-time lows. And so here we are on the verge of, you know, residential real estate going negative, and everybody thinks that interest rates are going up. It doesn't make any sense. Now, I do want to give a bit of a compliment to one of the people who posted in the comments, because they said something really cool, and I'm going to completely modify it and change it. Because I don't remember exactly how it was worded, but I'm going to give you the overall gist. And they said, well, wait a minute, Steve, if what you're saying is true and the Fed is reducing the supply of bonds, which we know is a fact, they are through quantitative easing, when all these people that are buying the bought stocks way up high, when market eventually comes down due to the insolvency event or maybe another liquidity event, and they end up selling and looking to go buy bonds, there's going to be a smaller supply for them to buy from. Right. And they said that has to mean the bonds are going to go way, way up. You got it. That's exactly it. So all the Fed is doing is constricting supply ahead of a point where there's going to be a massive demand for it. You know, when people say, Steve, there's no way rates can go to zero. When you understand how much money is in the equity markets that could get repositioned into the bond market, and it won't take a lot. And then you factor all these short positions, why we look at this. So you notice that all these short positions are facing an ever decreasing supply. And you start to wonder, like, why aren't the banks reversing this? Because they're bringing in every possible sucker. So when you hear, you know, like a CEO of a bank or a bank analyst come out and say, well, rates, you know, they can only go up. Rates have to go up. All it's doing is bringing in more and more people to sell, because the banks know that the Fed is constricting supply. And when all this gets unwound, all those long positions the banks are holding are going to become massively profitable as money floods into a reduced supply of the bond market, courtesy of the Fed. Hey, I appreciate all of you being fans. Be sure to like, be sure to subscribe. We'll see you on Wednesday for the macro show. And I'm working on a special edition, a QE edition. I'm hoping to have it out for you on Christmas, actually. So my gift to you. We'll see if I can get it done. I'll be working on that tomorrow. Again, thank you for being fans. And we will be back as soon as I figure out how to get the disclosure put up here. And away we go. The content of this video is provided as educational information only. It's not intended to provide investment or other advice. This channel is not to be construed as a recommendation or solicitation by Social Security, financial instrument, or to participate in any particular trading strategy. This video was prepared by Steve Van Meter, personal capacity. Opinions expressed in this video that do not reflect the Atlas Financial Advisors, Inc. or Steve Van Meter Financial.